Hey, Anna, remember that time we stopped fighting the British for science?
Historical podcast. I'm your host, Anna Webb.
And I'm your host, Amanda Webb. This is a podcast where two sisters totally geek out on all their favorite moments in history. And I almost messed up the intro. I never remember what I'm going to say.
Me too. I was like, what's the name of our show again? I can't remember.
What's happening?
I was like, welcome to... Right. Okay.
The show. Welcome to the show. Congratulations.
Welcome to the show here. It's us. And we're back.
And we're doing it.
And we're making a show. I'm really tired today. I stayed up really late reading last night, like high school levels of staying up late reading, you know, like where I looked at the clock and I was like, oh God, no. I have school tomorrow. No, I was just like, oh, I have to get up. Like, why did I do that? And then my brain went, well, we're recording on a Saturday. It was like, oh, it's a weekend. You'll be fine. And then I slept really hard, so.
Yeah, it was our first week back to school after spring break. And so, like, all week I have been exhausted. So, catching up on the sleep.
Yeah. I feel like I look tired. Like, I'm looking at myself on her video call and I'm like, wow, she looks tired.
She's sleepy.
She looks like she has not slept. So, that prompts a drink update, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm having coffee.
Ah, of course. Yeah, morning record.
Uh-huh.
I'm drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
As per usual. All right. Well, I think today's going to be a kind of shorter episode. I was feeling uninspired and just, you know, was like Googling random, like, interesting things to learn about. Yeah. And I found a very interesting article on the Smithsonian website about what we're going to talk about today. And it's
Smithsonian website.
Topical, sort of, even though this has already happened. But we're going to be talking about the solar eclipse of 1780. So...
Cool.
We just had a solar eclipse, so some of this will be relevant, I suppose.
I was thinking about how, like, it was such a big deal here because it was crossing.
We were in
our
totality,
continent,
yeah.
But like how other places didn't see it that day,
yeah.
But I think Australia sees it, like because I was getting a bunch
of
stuff that was like donate your glasses, and then they were gonna send the glasses to. Like kids in other countries so they could see them. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't get another one to cross continental U.S. for, I think, 40 years is our next one. Yeah. So we got two.
I'm in my 30s, 5 years. So bye.
Yeah. We got 2 in 5 years and then we won't get another one for a while. It's wild.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to talk just a little bit about the scientist that we're going to follow through all of this first. Okay. And then we're going to talk about why this – because this was just a normal solar eclipse. Like, there's nothing special about the solar eclipse. But the story of this guy viewing the eclipse is what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So Samuel Williams is born on April 23rd, 1743 in Waltham, Massachusetts to Warham and Abigail Williams. So he is born in early colonial America, settled but not its own country yet. He goes to Harvard and he graduates in 1761. He actually misses his commencement ceremony because he was on a trip with his professor, John Winthrop, to view the transit of Venus.
Cool.
So he was like a very dedicated mathematic and like astronomical studies, like navigation, all that kind of stuff.
That's
and
more exciting than a Harvard graduation.
Yeah.
Material.
So he was back then. Studying under this guy, John Winthrop, who was like the chair of that department. And he missed his commencement to go on this trip, which I thought was cool.
That's a good choice.
Yeah.
I think he made the right choice.
Yeah. when he's 22 years old, he becomes a minister for a few years.
Oh, interesting.
Which is, yeah, he went from studying science to being a minister, but apparently he was very like, we must understand the natural world to understand God. Like, that was his vibe.
Kind of. Like, lots of people became ministers back then, I think.
Yeah.
Because it was such
he was in Massachusetts. You know how it goes.
The society was very, like, we need to establish churches mm-hmm. and we, you know,
yeah.
we need to plant our faith here because, mm-hmm. you know, the colonialists love making other people believe what they believe.
Truly. Truly. So he's the pastor at First Bradford Church from 1763 to 1779. He also taught at a school in Bradford sure. while he was there. And John Winthrop, his like mentor in college, dies in 1779, and Samuel takes over as the Hollis Professor of Mathematics and Natural Philosophy at Harvard. So he's like he steps in after his mentor dies. Yeah, and yeah. so he becomes like the chair of that department for Harvard. And he'll work there for several years. So in 1780, there is a solar eclipse that is due to pass over the United States. They use, like, lunar maps that were predictions of the lunar phases to, like, calculate that kind of stuff. People have been viewing solar eclipses for a long, long time. Sure. This was the period where we had just started to be able to predict them well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm so curious about, like, how they got the word out and did people care?
Well, people didn't have the instruments to view it. Yeah.
And also, like, people who weren't, like, this guy, you know, like, into mm-hmm. it, did they care? And what did – and at this point in time, like, what did they think was happening? Like,
By the 1700s, they had a pretty solid understanding of what was happening. They had not observed yeah. all of – we're going to talk about it, like oh, okay. the ins and outs of it. But they understood, like, there's a very strong understanding of the stars, right, at this point.
Yeah, I guess
because
that's
they use
true.
It for navigation and stuff, which is also important yeah. to our story. So they knew what was happening. It was just that, like, the tools that they used to predict it weren't honed yet.
I wonder about, like, because in the year of y'all's Lord 2024 – there were a lot of people who were like, you know, conspiracies and because mm-hmm. that's a thing. So I wonder about like the hyper religious.
God's
then.
Blocking out the sun.
Yeah. Like it's so fascinating.
Man shakes his fist at cloud.
Because we know they could figure it out. Even like, I mean, the freaking ancient Egyptians could figure
how
it out.
How to figure
right?
it out.
It's not
yeah.
like it was new, but I just find the cultural aspect
yeah.
of it interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. But he wants to go on an expedition to observe the eclipse because it's not sure. going to pass over Boston where he is, okay? One of the reasons that he wants to study the eclipse, and I found this really interesting, but I also could not grasp it whatsoever as I was reading about it. So don't ask me more questions. This is what I know.
I'm not a scientist.
He wants to study the eclipse because studying the movement of the moon was one way to measure latitude. So longitude at the time... No, I have it backwards. Longitude, to measure longitude. Latitude oh. at the time was easy to measure because you used the position of the sun in the sky at different right. hours of the day to measure latitude. Lines of latitude were really easy to find. There are natural things that you can use. Longitude is much more difficult because you have to then imagine.
Are you sure you have it right? Because it's
no, lat is flat, long is up and down. I wrote it backwards on here. I'm right.
Okay,
I know
I was
what I'm
confused.
Talking about. Yeah.
I was like,
I wrote it
sure?
wrong. I typed it up wrong. I typed it up wrong. Longitude, there's no set thing to observe right. because right. of the way that degrees of longitude works. So there was a method called the lunar method that people would okay. use to measure longitude at sea. I don't totally understand how it works. Basically, it's no. like they measured where the moon was in the sky, and then they picked a different celestial body. And then they, like, measured the distance between the two, and then as they watched the moon move through the sky and they measured the distance, they knew that the moon, like, moved a certain number of degrees of longitude every hour, so they could like measure where their longitude was based on that. That's about as much as I understood out of that explanation.
That's super interesting, but there is a reason I am not a science person.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it's like a lot of information for me.
Yeah. So like they have latitude down at this point, right? But longitude, they are still struggling to accurately measure it. And so it's hard for people to navigate and get, like, shipments in at the right location because it's hard for them to measure it. So okay. this lunar method is, like, emerging, and because the moon is going to pass in front of the sun, and they know exactly where the sun is in the sky,
right?
It's going to be a much more accurate measurement if you measure it during a solar eclipse.
Wow, interesting.
Because it's they know the fixed point of the sun in the sky, right? So that was one of the reasons they wanted to do this expedition. Also, very few scientists in America up to this point had ever been able to study a solar eclipse. So he wanted to record, like, general data about it, like temperature, light distortion, like all this stuff that, like, they know was observed, but America, a brand new nation still in the middle of the Revolutionary War, wants to start to establish itself in the science and the arts. And so this is kind of a cool opportunity for him to start, like, to put a foot in the door in that, you know?
Interesting.
So he calculated that totality for this eclipse was going to pass over a place called Penobscot, I think, is how you would say that?
Sure.
Penobscot Bay,
sure.
Which is in what is today South Central Maine. Mm-hmm. And so...
Bit of a distance from Boston back then.
Right. Yes, it was a 165-mile trip by sea from Boston. So he needs money, right, to be able to take this trip.
Yeah.
So he sends a petition to the Massachusetts House of Representatives asking for permission to go on this trip and for supplies. And the reason, like, he gives lots of reasons in his explanation, but the big one is this is going to be really essential research in being able to determine longitude.
Well, yeah, they've got ports there. They need that information
exactly.
to help bring in their ships in. That's actually a really good argument for
exactly.
them. Yeah.
So he gets permission. He gets a galley stocked with supplies, and the House of Representatives, the Massachusetts House, you know, says, yes, we're going to help you fund this trip, which makes this the first state-sponsored scientific research in United States history.
Wow.
Isn't that really interesting?
That's so interesting. I mean, yeah, clicks, that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
But that's really interesting.
Huh. Yeah. It's also co-sponsored by the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, which was a brand new organization at this point. It had, like, just been founded. And also the University of Cambridge is helping to sponsor this particular expedition. I think I think that the University of Cambridge was the one that was working with the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and he was a member of the American Academy.
I see.
And so it's not a Harvard trip, it's a Cambridge trip. You know what I'm saying?
Got it.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
But here's the problem. Here's the issue. Penobscot Bay is in the middle of British-controlled territory.
Yeah.
Because this is the middle of the Revolutionary War. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wants to sail right into it with a Massachusetts galley.
Right.
So that also meant that when he sent his petition to the Massachusetts House, they actually weren't the ones who officially approved it. The War Board was.
Right.
They had to send it on to the War Board to say, are you guys willing to spare a ship? Not even to send it into British territory. To spare a ship in the middle of the Revolutionary War for this guy to go do this
research. Yeah, that seems
research.
A little irresponsible seeing, just considering our position in terms of supplies and weaponry during this particular war, where we were, in fact, underdogs and had a lot less than the opposing forces.
Yeah. So this Penobscot Bay, middle of British-controlled territory, actually, the year before, Massachusetts had sent a ship up there to try and, like, capture a British garrison, and 500 Americans died in that trip.
Yeah,
so, like, this is
they were definitely outmanned,
contested. This is not only is it in British territory, Massachusetts already has a history of, like, trying to step up into that area.
Yeah,
so that also means that they have to get permission from the British to be able to go, because they're not going
to
send it in undercover, because,
like,
they're going to think
not a warship.
Yes, they're going to think that it's an attack, so they have to get permission from the British government to be able to complete this expedition.
And
if he did not
get searched, and,
if he didn't get permission from the British, we just would not have viewed this eclipse.
Wow.
Whatsoever. So John Hancock, who was the Speaker of the Massachusetts House at the time, writes a letter to the British commander requesting that the expedition be allowed through. this quote was from his letter. It said, though we are politically enemies, yet with regard to science, it is presumable we shall not dissent from the practice of all civilized people in promoting it.
God, it's just such a like British thing to do, to be like, hello, we would like to send a scientific ship into your controlled territory.
Yeah.
Please don't shoot at it. Oh, jolly good. We'll have them. Like, it's so, like, you know, that whole idea yes. of, like, decorum, which is so funny to think about because it's like, wow, where'd that go, huh? Sometimes.
Yeah, what happened there?
Sometimes it's like, maybe we could have a little bit of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the British allow the expedition. They give him permission to come. But they say that they can't come onto the mainland, which is fine. There's lots of islands in that bay.
Yeah.
And that they have to leave, like, as soon as the eclipse is over. Because they worried that he would, even there on that scientific trip, that he would, like, contact spies and get information.
Yeah.
So they say, yeah, you can come, but you have to stay over there, and then you have to leave.
Yeah.
But I thought this was really interesting because there have been, like, a history of the Americans and the British, like, agreeing to ignore everything else for the sake of science.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a story of, like, Benjamin Franklin saying that, like, hey, so-and-so's coming over. I can't remember his name. It's a very famous... Oh, I had it and I lost it. Anyway, he was like, hey, so-and-so's exploring the region. Don't shoot at his ship. He's doing scientific research. Shoot.
I know who you're talking about, but I also can't think of the name.
I'm going to find it while you're talking.
It's so funny. It's like a game of stickball, right? Like, everybody pause, car, and then run.
Yeah. Car.
Sorry, can we pause the war for a second? Just if we could pause, time out.
Time out.
This guy's coming in to explore some stuff. Is that okay? Yeah, that's fine. Bring him in.
Come on through.
Resume.
Oh, it was James Cook. Captain James
yes.
Cook.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That was
he had been coming through the area on, like, a scientific voyage, and Benjamin Franklin was like, hey, if his ship comes around, don't step to it. By the time Benjamin Franklin was like, hey, leave him be, he was already dead. But that is besides the point.
You're right. That'd be an interesting topic.
Yeah, it was wild. That's a whole journey is something.
Need t-shirts that say, like, that's a different episode.
That's a different episode. Yeah. So they let him through. And just every article that I read about this, everybody was just like, the cool thing about this story is that, like, everybody was in favor of the sciences, right? Everybody said, we will let bygones be bygones for the sake of making sure that we can advance scientific research. Because this research benefits everyone.
And also, if you think about it, like, from the, you know, colonists' perspective, oh, this is a great advancement for us when we become our own nation or whatever. Own nation, in quotes, because, you know, all of it's stolen. But, you know, when we become a country, like, we will have this scientific advancement.
Uh-huh.
It'll be ours. And from the British perspective, it's like, when we win them back, because they were so certain they would, we will have this scientific advancement, because technically it will be ours, right?
Yeah. So. But then also, the other thing is, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who it belongs to, the research he's going to do is going to benefit everybody. Everybody needs longitudinal measurements.
They're thinking about who wins, right? Like, you know, the other scientists are probably thinking the way you are, but the people giving the permission are thinking, that would be good for us when we definitely win, you know?
So Samuel and his expedition, I think it's like him and like 9 people, leave Boston and they sail to Islesborough Island, in the middle of that bay.
That seems like a redundant name.
Yeah.
Islesborough Island. Neighborhood of the island. Island.
Island. Island. Island.
Yeah. Neighborhood. Island. Island. Neighborhood. Island.
And they arrive on October 17th, which is 10 days before the eclipse is due, so that they can get, like, set up. Because it takes a lot of instruments and measurements to view stuff like this in the 1700s.
I wonder what they viewed. Do you know what they viewed it through?
A telescope.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they used several different, like, measurements, like, tools and things.
You know somebody on that ship looked directly at it, though.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
You know they did.
100%.
Like, why do my eyes hurt so bad?
What the heck? That's wild.
And the scientists were like, don't look. Steve,
stop looking at it.
Steve, don't look at the sun.
You're going to hurt your eyes.
Steve, we all know it's going to be you, man. Don't look at it.
There's a telescope right here. There's a telescope right. I'll let you take a turn. Come on. There is some concern that cloud cover is going to obstruct the view, but it all clears up before anything starts. And on October 27th, 1780, Samuel Williams and his crew observe and record the solar eclipse.
That was our concern here. And the clouds just, at least where I was, the clouds just went, boop, bye.
Yep. Yeah, it was all day, super, super cloudy. Right before the eclipse, it, like, cleared up. It was awesome.
Even in, like, the, I don't know, hour before where you could see it moving in, it was pretty cloudy. It kept getting covered up by clouds. But as soon as it was our peak, they were just gone.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. So they take detailed notes, they record the progress approximately every 2 minutes, blah, 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 blah. This, I thought, was very, very interesting. So while he's observing, when there's like only a little bit of sunlight left, he sees through the telescope what he described as small drops or stars, some of which were round and others an oblong figure. And what he saw was a phenomenon we now call Bailey's beads, which are these bright spots of sun that appear just before totality, and it comes from the, like, mountains and valleys of the moon reflecting the light of the sun.
That's so cool.
But here's what I thought was very, very interesting about this. He is technically the first person to observe this phenomenon.
But it's not named after him.
It's not, because it was a very, very small part of his report. Like, he didn't record it in detail. He was just like, I saw this weird thing, and he, like, sketches it. So we have a drawing from another, like, member of his expedition that is the exact phenomenon. It's Bailey's beads. That's, like, what it is. Huh. But it was a really small part of the report. And so then in 1836, when Francis Bailey observes this and writes an entire report on it, it gets named after him, but he was not the first person to observe it. Samuel Williams was. On this particular expedition.
I mean, I'm going to be honest, Bailey's beads kind of sounds better than Williams.
I think it would have been Williams drops, because that's how he described it, as drops instead of as beads.
Bailey's beads still kind of sounds
better. But isn't that cool? Like, I thought that was so interesting that he observed it, like, a long time before Bailey did, but nobody had, like, nobody noticed that little bit of his research until, like, much later.
Oh, cool. And
moved on. Yeah.
Huh.
So, but then here's the bummer. When totality was due to start, it doesn't. They don't reach full totality. They get like 99%. And the team discovers that their initial calculations were incorrect.
What a bummer. Oh my God. That sucks.
Yeah. So this is, a quote I got from one of the articles I was reading, because Penobscot Bay was on the map that was available to Samuel at the time, was half a degree too far south on the map. So the path of totality went north of their location by 35 miles.
Oh, that is harsh.
But that also is why his research that he did here was so important, because then they were able to make more accurate maps. The map he had wasn't accurate. And
that
so
he didn't get to see the corona.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh, man.
But they were too far south by 35 miles, a half a degree of longitude. Yeah. Or of latitude. Half a degree.
Man.
Wild. So one of the things that they got out of the data that he collected is it let them get an accurate longitude for Cambridge, Massachusetts, because they were studying, you know, longitude while they were there, which let people navigate New England a lot easier.
Yeah.
He published his report on the eclipse in the very first volume of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences Scientific Journal. So this report,
what a get for your first volume.
Yeah. This report is in their very first thing. He reports on how the temperature changed, the planets and stars that became visible as the light got blocked out. Like, it was a big chunk of research for 1780 in America, you know, like.
And for honestly, like a few minutes at yeah. the event.
Yeah. You know. But they got so much information out of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really helped with that like longitudinal measurement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's like the long and short of the eclipse itself. I just have a couple of things about like the rest of Samuel's life.
Yeah.
He continues to work for Harvard for several years. You know, he does a lot of scientific research projects, all that kind of stuff through them. Between 1785 and 1788, he helped to survey the boundary between New York and Massachusetts. So he does a lot more of that, like, map-making, navigation kind of work.
Sure.
Apparently, him and his wife were very bad at managing their money.
Apparently. And that's how he said it, like the apparently kid. Apparently.
And in 1788, he's forced to resign from Harvard because he had forged receipts from a creditor who was dead to try and make it look like his debts had been paid off.
Oh,
so but the guy that he was making the receipts for was dead. So they were like, that's not him.
it is fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just.
Yeah. So Harvard was like, hi. You can't continue to work here.
Butter.
You should resign. So he moves to Rutland, Vermont. He becomes a newspaper editor and a preacher there for a while.
Sure.
He helps
when
to
in doubt, become a preacher.
Yeah, just hey, tried and true, buddy. He helps to establish the University of Vermont in Burlington.
Oh.
He publishes a natural and civil history of Vermont in 1794. He moves to Middlebury, Vermont, and becomes, like, a printing press guy at that time.
Sure.
Vermont commissioned him to survey the boundary between Vermont and Canada in 1805. So he keeps doing a lot of the work that he was doing before, just in, like, a different context now.
Yeah.
And he dies on January 2nd, 1817, and he's buried in Rutland, Vermont.
Huh.
Yeah. And a bunch of the navigation instruments and the other tools that he used on that expedition are still held by Harvard today.
Sure.
So they have...
It seems a little bit like Cambridge maybe should have gotten them, but whatever.
But it was like his... It was their supply. I mean, he took them from Harvard's supply.
Yeah.
They were their tools to start with. But yeah, they like have them on display and they have like all the information about how he used them and like all the other stuff that they were used for. But a lot of the reason we still have his story recorded today, I mean, obviously because his report was in that very first volume, but also because Harvard still has all of the stuff. So they have like all of his records of the journey and all that kind of stuff.
Wow, that's so cool.
I just thought that was such an interesting story.
Very interesting.
That he had to go into British territory to
and then
view
was in
the eclipse.
Slightly wrong place.
Slightly wrong spot, yeah.
After going through all of that.
And, but even if he had been in the right place, he still would have had to be in British territory.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and he also probably would have had to be on the mainland, and that probably would have been a very different scenario.
They probably wouldn't have let
they
him
might
go.
Not have let him go. So it kind of worked out that he wasn't
either that or he
where he had
surrounded
to be
surrounded by British troops for the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of worked out that he was where he was.
Can you imagine coming in to do your science and you set everything up and then there are like troops all around you?
And like, they're just like, what you doing, guys?
What are you guys doing? It's like, I really don't have time to explain this to you.
I'm very busy, actually. Thank you.
Like very complicated, like more complicated than whatever you're doing, actually.
Just leave me be, thanks. But I just thought it was such a cool story that like the good of that scientific order was enough to be like, yeah, you can come, you know?
Yeah, well, there used to be rules of war. Apparently we've done away with that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And we also used to value scientific research like,
yeah,
a lot
that
more.
Too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 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 yeah. And we kind of needed it a lot back then, too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, those were all things that, like, they really needed those types of measurements and stuff to be able to, like, keep their economy
Everything
going.
Was so new. They had to value that scientific research above everything else because it made the world that they lived in functional. Like,
yeah,
they needed to – they it was important for them to prioritize that because it made – living and doing all of the work that they did a reality.
Possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really interesting.
Yeah, fun little story. I did most of my research from an article from the Smithsonian, like I said before. And then I found a bunch of the other, like, scientific journal, like the reports of his reports. And a couple little biographies on him. It was hard to find information. That's why this one's a little bit shorter. But also because the story is very, like, succinct. So
it all happened
in this one little pocket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I think they requested the trip in, like, August, and then they were on it by October. So, like, you know.
Very interesting. Good episode, Amanda.
Thanks.
Well, that's, as the bunny says, all folks. No, the pig says it. The pig says it. That's all folks. So we got this. I'm tired. I'm so sorry.
Oh, man.
Don't know what we're going to do next time.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? But thank you all for listening. If you have suggestions for future episodes, we would love it if you would send them our way. You can email us at rememberthatpod@gmail.com. And if you want to find us on social media, we're at RTTpod. We're on Instagram and Threads and Facebook. Who cares about that, though? genuinely. But if you want to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to this podcast, we would appreciate it. And if you'd like to find me on the internet, I am at The Real Anna Webb.
And I'm at ACW Nerdfighter.
Woohoo. I feel like we speed ran that episode a little bit. Not on purpose.
It just was a shorter story. But our last one was long. So, like, here's a little.
And it was a convoluted story.
Here's a little bite-sized one for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time.
Remember that time.